This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the Bradley Wiggins Show by Eurosport, brought to you by Zwift, the cycling app that makes training fun, because fun is fast.
Unless you've got no brakes, it's fucking terrifying.
It can be a little bit scary. I'm Graham Wilgos in the company of Bradley Wiggins this evening. Brad, a little bit of history made today.
Yes. Someone equaled great Eddie Merckx's record in 34 wins, the Tour de France.
A very good friend of yours.
Mark Cavendish, yes. And we were all there to witness it. And I'll introduce another man who's here with us on the podcast. Is the man who led him out to his first stage win 13 years ago on the 9th of July, which is today, in Châteauroux.
Thanks for having
Bernard
me.
Bernie Eisel.
Bernie Eisel, welcome to the Bradley Wiggins Show.
Thanks for having me, and especially for interrupting right now. But also, I'm absolutely impressed. It was the 9th of July, 13 years ago. Yeah. Great to know.
Yeah, 13 years ago.
There's a lovely symmetry, you were saying earlier, Bernie, to Cav's career. 9th of July, 13 years ago, stage number 10 for him in the Tour de France was on the Champs-Élysées. Stage number 20, I think I'm right in saying, was also on the Champs-Élysées. Take us back to stage number one very quickly, because you rode the Tour with him in 2007, and
he crashed
there were
a few
crashes. Yeah, it was very obviously a very nervous debut. But then 2008, I think you were expecting him to do what he did in 2008.
Yeah, definitely. 2007, he was nervous starting in Great Britain. Expectations were a little bit too high from all of us. But it was also a learning process, learning curve. And I think that's when he fell in love with the Tour. And I have to also say, British riders, I was always impressed by the history they know and how they come up with things I never thought about. It's like race in Italy everywhere, but Cav, Bradley especially, is like knowing everything behind the scenes and the history, the names. And then 2008, he just went on. It's like we knew it's going to happen. We had to push on to make it happen in Châteauroux. That was the first stage win and took us till the final 50 metres to make it happen.
Was Gerald the last rider to swing off that day, was it? Chulek, was it?
Yes,
he was. I remember watching it, yeah.
Brad, let's just put it in a bit of context to fast forward to today. Stage win number 34 of the Tour de France. Back in October at Gent-Wevelgem, we saw Cav in tears, thinking that was going to be his last race. What a way to bow out for the greatest sprinter already back then that the sport has ever seen. Now that he's equaled Merckx's record with stage win number 34, yeah. I think it's fair to say that even one stage win at this Tour would have been spectacular and unexpected.
No, I think from where he'd come from the last couple of years, you know, what he'd been through in his life, you know, I mean, it's not been well documented because it's very personal, I think, but, you know, he struggled with a loss of identity a little bit because his whole, his whole ego, in a good way, you know, we all have egos, but his sporting ego was built around his identity as Mark Cavendish, who's a winner. He's a winner through and through. That's all he lives for. All the sacrifices he makes in his life is to win bike races, not to finish second or third. And he doesn't just win for Mark. He's winning for his teammates and his family and everything. It means more to him that he wins for everyone around him than himself. He's not a selfish winner. Is he, Bernie, at all?
Never, ever. I mean,
like, his winning's for everyone. Yeah.
Hard to handle, but...
And then when he's not winning, he's pissed off. You know, it's not because I'm not winning Mark Cavendish's ego. It's, I'm sorry, guys. It's for everyone else. That's what he's like, isn't he? I mean, you spent a lot of time around him. That's what he's...
Definitely. He's that man. You can have an argument with him. You can fight with him. But he will come back to that moment. Is like... We all know we're working for this day, and he's the first one who's going to say thank you to the mechanics and everyone on the team, not just the teammates. He's going to go around making his tour and just going to live up how much he invested, but he also always remembers how much everyone else in the team put in to make it happen for him.
He won't be sat there tonight thinking, I've equaled Merckx's record. He'll be pleased that he's won four stages and that Morkov got second today, and that he's won four stages for Patrick, and the mechanics are happy, and that he delivered for the team, the work they'd done. And he'll be happy that he won to pay Tim de Klerk, who crashed back. That'll be his first thought. He won't be sitting there thinking, yeah, I've won Merckx's record. It'll be for everyone else. He'll put everyone else first.
Tim de Klerk crashed, but then battled on his own. So usually you'd see him in the closing stages, helping Cav, being part of that sprint train, making sure, delivering him to the point where he needs to be to take the stage. He battled on bravely, made the time cut today. So he will, we hope, help Cav through the mountains now. Michael Morkov, you mentioned there, coming in second.
Yeah.
That shows you just how strong Morkov was. I mean, he soft pedaled in that those closing 50 metres. He could have taken the stage.
Yeah. Well, that shows how committed he is to Cav.
Morkov's incredible.
I mean,
shows you the team spirit they've got there as well. A brief sort of word on Morkov.
Cav has always been praised of his teammates, you know. You know, Cav can't do it on his own, and he's seen that the last few years, you know, with the people he's had around him. But even in the high road days, there was how many stages could Renshaw have won?
Definitely.
You know, Cav has been blessed with great teammates as well, which is why he praises him so highly.
Well, Renshaw famously came second on the Champs-Élysées, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And I also was just thinking, is like, imagine Morkov would have rolled him on the line. That would have made the news too.
Well, Philipsen was coming quick, wasn't he?
Jasper Philipsen coming in third. Let's just hear how Carlton Kirby called it for us on Eurosport and GCN+.
And here it comes. It's a very, very big right-hander. It kind of phases into it, and this is a big one. You've got to be in a good place here, and if you've got the luxury of having a couple of lead-out train men in front of you, why not have three, for goodness sake? That's the luxury of Mark Cavendish as he hits the Flamme Rouge right now. This is not the finishing straight, repeat, not the finishing straight. We've got two big turns still to come, and there's a major one at 600, and here comes Colbrelli, the Italian champion, spurring up the centre of the road, making a bully nuisance of himself at the moment. Is Conor Swift. He's got Nasser Bouwani on his back wheel, but Mark Cavendish is still in the bird seat for the time being. Jesper Stuyven's in a very good place, and here is that turn at 600. There's another one to come, don't forget, with about 125 to go. They still cannot see the line as it stands, and here comes Colbrelli. It's a mosh in there, and suddenly Mark Cavendish finds himself with a hobo in the train, and that happens to be Nasser Bouwani for the time being. DSM and Tate Boll are still very much involved. Where's Mark Cavendish? Boxed in for the time being. He's refound himself right now, and he's going to have to go solo, is he? Oh, big turn now coming, and this is only with about 125 to go, and here we go. It's now or never for Mark Cavendish. They've picked it up and gone for it. Garcia's in the way at the moment. Philipsen's getting involved, and here comes Mark Cavendish. It's coming up to the line. Is he going to get there? Oh, I think he has. I think he has done it. He has got there. That was so complicated. It took a genius to unpick it.
Brad, Cav's reaction today was that he went deep. You saw how much he left on the road there, 220 kilometres from Nîmes to Carcassonne in the sweltering heat. He said he was on the limit there, following his team in, coming into those closing few, last couple of kilometres, last few hundred metres. Going that deep, how's he going to come back tomorrow?
Well, Cav always says you can't explain to anyone just how damaging doing those sprints is. You're at capacity effort for the last 20K, and it's not just a sprint he has to do. He doesn't get delivered and he's not doing anything to that point. It's the power surges that all constant. And then to deliver at the end, the muscle damage you do, he always pays for it the day after. And even the other last week when I spoke to him on the phone, when I was in the van, and he'd had the sprint win, then he had a time trial stage, then he had the mountain stage. He said he was so it just, the muscle damage, because he can go so fast, the damage he does to his muscles, he pays for it. And he always struggles the day after a win, doesn't he?
Definitely.
And I think, like you said earlier, he's going to struggle tomorrow.
I'm really worried.
And he has a glass of champagne when he's won and stuff, and he mentally comes down. And
yeah.
And it's hard for him because he's got to pick himself up. It's not an easy job.
Yeah. Is the mental come down going to be that much more severe this time around? Because I would imagine, however much Cav says he doesn't think about it, he doesn't talk about it, he sort of flat-batted the questions about Merckx's record away. Now that he's equaled it, and now that he doesn't have to answer those questions anymore, all right, he might have one or two about, are you going to beat the record now? Is that a huge weight off his shoulders? And is that emotionally quite the come down?
I think so, because I have seen him different in the mix zone after the race, because he's definitely more relaxed. And
but in those years when he was winning, when you were with him in High Road and stuff, how was he always after that? Because I think every stage he wins is an emotional one. He doesn't take it for granted, does he, every stage he wins?
Not a single one.
Whether it was number 15 or number 20 or number 25.
I've seen him, we have seen him getting a bit cocky at some times, but never ever he was like, that was an easy one, or he knew, I can repeat it. He knew also when he came here that after winning the first one, there's more to come, and we could see that. And now it's the pressure the team actually puts on him, delivering him perfectly, doing all this work, and that puts the pressure on him, and that's, he has to stand up every single day. And I think that is the hardest part for him at the moment. The racing, getting from A to B, is not as hard as knowing how much the team is investing for him to make it happen. And that's, he always wants to stand up this performance and the pressure what they actually do for him.
If, and I think it's fair to say it's a reasonably big if, he makes it through the Pyrenees now. Like you say, Bernie, you're worried about him. Not that we don't think he will bounce back and his team will carry him through. You know, for a man like Cav, the mountainous stages that we've got this coming weekend, they're going to be a big ask for him, right? If he can get through those, is the pressure off a little bit, given that he's got two flat stages still to come?
He will make it through the Pyrenees, no doubt about that. It's just, I know him, he's the only sprinter I've seen in my whole life who can do a second kick, and that's what I've seen today. When Seth Ball and these guys went, and he had to surge on the wheel of Murkoff going around, and it was when Ballerini went. So he did his first kick, and then he did his second kick to win the sprint, and that's what takes all the energy out of him and really kills him. But tomorrow, for fairness, I had to bring him through the Pyrenees on my own, with Renshaw crying on the wheel. Now he got four guys around, five guys even around him. So, no, but honestly, I've long time, probably the last time I've seen Cav climbing that wall was in 2012 when Bradley won the Tour.
Yeah. Did I hear you say earlier you've had 27 stage victories? You've played a part in 27 stage victories with Cav.
I did a quick calculation for my stand-up after the day, and it was 27 stages, yeah. And honestly, going through all the pictures when I was like, how many stages it was there, is like, brings back so many memories. It's,
what was
it's
the best
incredible.
One? Was it the one I was involved in?
I think, yeah.
Paris was f***ing great, wasn't it?
Paris, world champion, Maillot Jaune.
And the Norwegian champion, Eddie.
Yeah. No, and we had it. It's like, when you know you have it. But the Maillot Jaune, the yellow jersey, leading out the world champion, the win on the Champs-Élysées. It's like, it's, you can't make it. You can't script that.
You took me to the tunnel, didn't you?
I think so.
You did.
Honestly, I can't remember. I had too much champagne
after. You took me to the tunnel. And then you dropped me off there, and that's when I tapped him on the arse. And we went past Saxo, Breschel, and those guys were riding. Yeah, that was a great day.
Same question to you then. You've asked Bernie, what was his best? Well, for you, apart from the Champs-Élysées, what was your best?
That was the best one to be part of, but the most impressive one I saw that I was part of was when he won a couple of days before that, before the time trial, where I think the brakes still had 40 seconds at the Flam Rouge or something stupid. And I took the chase up with K and a half to go or something. I delivered Edvald at a K, and then Cav had to sprint at 500 out to catch
Nico.
Roach on the road, on the line. And that I think that was, I wouldn't say that was the fastest he was ever sprinting, but it was the leanest I ever saw him, because he was getting for the Olympic road race. And he had length in his sprint. His endurance was incredible that year. The first stage he won that year as well, which we didn't really assist him with, because we were just like hovering. He had to do it all on his own.
Mm.
Do you remember that one?
Definitely. It was in, I think, Tournai or something.
Tournai, yeah, yeah. In the front, yeah.
And he wouldn't even stay with me and Eddie. He was just searching wheels. And that's why he's the best sprinter in the world, because he can do both, following his best lead out or searching.
Of course, the world title one as well. You helped us with that as well, didn't you, today?
Not officially.
No, that was always non-officially. But you helped us in Copenhagen. You and the two Belarusian mafia that never turned up in London. Bernie was our unofficial British ex-rider. Anywhere we used to go, Bernie was our British rider. Bernie's here, don't worry. I know he's wearing an Austrian jersey, but he's got a British passport.
Bernie, on behalf of Great Britain, we thank you for that. Nothing came of it, but we thank you. Brad, that stage 18 closing down Nico Roche in 2012, there was no conversation about it. It was just you talked about it that morning, and you knew you were going to go for it.
We always committed. Yeah, we never changed. We changed the plan for a stage, but we would never give up on the plan. So it wasn't said. It was just we ride to the line. I think when Mark was at his best, you just somehow knew that he was going to win. Yeah, no, it was like I remember watching. Roy Keane picked his best Man United 11, and he put Ruud van Nistelrooy up front, and he said Ruud would score goals for fun. And it reminded me of Cav, actually. He says whenever I saw him one-on-one with the keeper, you knew he was going to score. And that was always with Cav. If you deliver him to 200, 300 metres to go, at a certain point in his career you just knew he was going to win, you know.
Did you feel like that today? Did you feel like he was going to do it today?
Maybe not today, because I'm still waiting for something to go wrong. I'm waiting for him to get boxed in, or it not quite happened for him, or what, you know? And he's getting tired, and the whole thing with the skin suit and his shorts.
Because everything has gone right for him so far.
Yeah, but it's got right for him because he's put himself in that position.
Yeah.
It's not easy to do. There's no luck involved in it. He's had to do it all himself to this point. The only saving grace he's had is that Caleb Ewan's not here, but it would have been lovely to. I think he'd have beat Caleb Ewan the way he's going.
Bernie?
Because he wouldn't have had a team to deliver him.
Definitely. I was like, it would have been a close one.
Because Melilla, they were saying about the Giro and all that, that he was like, he's got this second kick on him and he's incredibly fast. But he's put Melilla and that Philipson to bed every time they've tried to go near him. So I wouldn't underestimate how well Cav is going, and it's not because other people ain't here.
Is today's sprint, for several reasons, the most difficult he's had to face in this tour?
Every tour stage is. I would say the first one he won was probably the most difficult.
Yeah. And then the pressure was off.
After that, yeah, I think he knows now. He's just got to get to 200 metres. He looks like he's got confidence again now.
Confidence, but it's
and
also...
his chain keeps coming off every time for some reason, every time he throws his hands in the air.
That's him. It happens to some of the sprinters, but it's also when he does his last pedal stroke. And if the freewheel stops and is not doing the same as what he's doing with his paddle, then his chain just runs backwards. And that's when he falls off. But that's whatever people make out of it, but it's just a normal reaction a bike would do on every single bike. So, but the thing is with Cav is it doesn't matter how dead he is. If you deliver him to the line and he sees that finish line and you bring him there,
there's no second place for him. He's only ever thinking of one thing. I've never met anyone like him from that point of view.
I think the nice thing as well is that it's meant so much to both of you. So, Brad, you had a lovely moment with Cav after he was done with his
We waited about an hour,
podium,
didn't we?
Yeah, after he was done with his podium obligations. Mm. While we were waiting, Bernie, sort of involuntary, you threw your arms in the air and just let out, yes, which was lovely. Sum up what it was like seeing Cav afterwards today.
Him beautiful.
Hugging
it
out.
It was lovely. No, it was just lovely. I mean, none of us want to sit there off the back of his reflective glory. But
that wasn't what you were there for.
No, I hadn't seen him the whole race, and it was lovely that he came to me and Bernie first and not the rest of the world's media, you know, because ultimately it was a very human moment. We were there. We weren't there from a media point of view, although we were doing that job. We were just there because we were pleased for him, and it meant a lot. And we saw his first, and we've seen his 34th.
Yeah. Bernie, what about you talking to Cav afterwards? I mean, you had a job to do as well, which must have been difficult to balance the two things at the same time.
I was bouncing up in front of this telly to watch it, and I was like, it's going to get boxed in, it's going to run late. It's like, I know him, and I know his face when he's absolutely on the limit, but when he got it, I didn't even have time to really enjoy the moment. It was just still adrenaline, and that's when he said, when I just
10, 15 minutes, probably 20 minutes later, just raised my arms, like just yelled for myself, because then I realized, okay, yeah, he did it again. And it's just a release for me. And yeah, still had to interview him, and yeah, it still makes me sweat.
But I think you were yelping for us all. I think that's how a lot of us felt. Cav means a lot to an awful lot of people. He's given us all an awful lot of joy over his career.
Well, I think that's it. You know, that's first and foremost, that's what he sort of does it for everyone else. Yeah.
Can we address the Merckx record?
Of course we can.
So it's a beautiful thing matching the record, but he is the first to say that, look, they're two entirely different riders, and you can't compare them. You can't compare them, because
but you don't have to compare them.
Yeah.
And I don't know who's asking that we should compare them. A lot of it is just stupid journalists that need some sort of column inches. Merckx is the greatest cyclist of all time.
And Cav would be the first to say that.
Yeah. Cav is the best British cyclist of all time and the greatest sprinter of all time. And he's in this up there with the same league as Eddie Merckx now in terms of tally and stage. That shows how long longevity of Cav's career has been, like Merckx's was, over many Tour de France's. Different generations of riders. He's had four generations. We said he was sprinting against McEwen, Pataki, Hushovd, Tyler Farrar, you know, Kittel, now the Caleb Ewan and these younger guys. He spanned all these generations of sprinters. I think he was even sprinting against Zabel in Milram days to begin with. And it's more of a case now, is anyone ever going to beat Cav's record? I don't think another sprinter will.
Nope.
He's just got to be up there with Merckx. Is anyone going to beat the record of Merckx and Cav?
Mm.
As the greatest sprinter of all time, the greatest cyclist of all time.
Mm.
And Merckx didn't win in sprints. Well, Merckx won in sprints, but he didn't win all his stages in sprints. You know, compared to the other sprinters, Mario Cipollini, Abdou Japarov, Jalabert, all these people in the past.
Half his stages were time trials, weren't they, Eddie Merckx?
Yeah, but you can only compare to other sprinters, you know? And that's why the record is so great. Because to go through all that craziness and chaos and win four or five stages in every race, it's f***ing hard. Merckx is the strongest in the mountains and would ride anyone off the wheel and win a stage, ride everyone off and win a time trial, you know. But Cav has to come through all that all day riding and the focus and come through all the shit at the end and roundabouts and speed humps, and he's done it 34 times.
Mm. Talking of speed
and that's
humps.
Greater than Merckx in that discipline.
Yeah, for sure.
The discipline of sprinting.
Well, because in a way, he's only got a third.
That's not to say he's greater than Merckx, but he's greater than Merckx in the sprinting. He's the best sprinter of all time.
Yeah.
In the same way, for a period, Cancellara was the greatest time trialist of his generation. And, you know, the best climber of their generation at some point was Quintana and, you know, and Pantani. And there's different segments of the sport, whereas Merckx was like the all-rounder.
And I mean, in its own right, Cav's only had a third of the opportunity that Merckx has had, in a way, given that you've got to rule time trials out, you've got to rule mountain stages out. Cav could only go for the sprints. Merckx could go for all three.
I think he even had like two stages a day. And
yeah, Eddie three Merckx sometimes.
And he used to win
a
two of
sprint
them.
Stage.
So, but I agree with Bradley. Eddie Merckx was the ultimate cyclist out there, and that record will stay. Can compare it with Fausto Coppi properly, and the history they wrote for cycling, but. I said to Cav this today, we're not going to talk about the record about Eddie Merckx, but I think we can call you now and stop the discussion if you are the best sprinter in the world of all time.
Yeah, he is, without doubt.
And he said, we have to judge it. Yeah, you are.
Brad, we're fortunate to be sponsored by Zwift, where fun is fast, but it also unlocks performance. Great app, but we use it in very different ways, don't we?
We do. I mean, I tend to go on sometimes with my son now and just try and keep up with him, really. And it's a way of riding together and grouping up with other people, maybe a few people, friends that live in London, if I'm up north or vice versa, because, you know, you can't always get on the roads with people. I've been on there with Matt Stevens, and I've also done some live Zwift sessions through Le Col and caught up with the likes of Victor Campenaert and Fabian Cancellara on it. So it's a great tool.
I'm a big fan of being able to get on there at short notice without having to organise a group ride in real life, if you like, and just buzz it around with a few mates.
Yeah, there's always someone on there that's willing to ride, even if, you know, it's a good way of making new mates.
It is, even if your mates aren't about. There's group rides, a massive community of pros on there, people exactly like me, exactly like you.
And I believe there's some Olympic-inspired routes on there, isn't there, Graham?
There are. You can explore the Mercury Islands to get you geared up, ready for the Olympics.
And I believe there's a 7-day free trial available.
Well, just in time for the Olympics, there's a 7-day free trial, a special offer. Find out more, download the app today. Good to put that to bed. Can I take you back to the beginning of today, Brad? Back on the bike again. Yeah. Another absolutely banzai start.
Yeah.
They went from the gun, they went hard, the breakaway particularly. But the peloton as well, De Koenig, were working hard to control it.
Well,
so you
headwind.
Could kind of see how it was going to, well, how they yeah. wanted it to pan
the
out
wind,
today.
Yeah, the wind didn't do what it was supposed to do today, and there was a headwind most of the day, which caused the peloton to bunch up quite a lot because everyone's trying to move up, and it's easy to move up because there's a barrage across the road. But it was a tough stage. Lots of small roads. Every town we went through, there were speed humps and road furniture. The road, there was a big crash, which lost Simon Yates today, didn't we? That was gravel on either side of the road. It wasn't a pleasant stage. So, again, it wasn't an easy stage for Cav and the team to control at all.
Simon Yates, you mentioned there, he's out. He rode on, but he's dropped out. After so many crashes for the peloton as a whole, I mean, you can't blame him for saying, actually, today, enough is enough.
I think he was in... We spoke to Matt White.
You spoke to White at the end, yeah.
He said it was no-go. I think it was just... you know, once you get to a point, your injury's sustained, you know, this... You know, if you know no bones broken, you can carry on, fair enough, but... I mean, you have to feel for, like, gee, the way he's been riding through this race, you know, he's...
Well, he came down in the crash again today.
Yeah. I mean, geez, he's a hard genie.
You know. Simon Yates, he would have been targeting a stage win in the Pyrenees, Bernie.
Yes, that was definitely his plan, but also coming out of the Giro, I think it's also, at some point, your body, your brain is just like, how much can you take more? It's like you taking a bunch there and there. It's fine. You get back up. You try again. And he tried. But it's just, at some point, you're just like, enough is enough. And that's what everybody has to understand. It has been 100% the hardest first 12 days. Or let's put it to the first rest day and first 9 days of racing we've ever seen in the Tour de France. It's like, it was incredible.
And Lewis Hamilton also out, so that's their two climbers down for the Pyrenees. All in for Matthews now, bike exchange.
All in for Matthews, but I really like Bling. But green really suits what, Cav?
Can we see anyone catching Cav?
Well, he's 100 points clear now, isn't he?
101.
Well, I don't think so, no. And he's got it spot on this year. Well, we got, what day are we on now? Friday, Saturday. Are we Saturday, Friday today?
Friday today.
So we've got just over a week to go.
Yeah.
So we've got Champs-Élysées, we've got a time trial, got a rest day. So there's 3 days. So we've probably got 5 days of racing left if you take them three off.
Yeah.
You know, two of them are mountain stages, so you wouldn't worry about that. I mean, he's there. He's just got to get through the race now.
Matthew showed an interest in the intermediate sprint. Cav showed absolutely no interest in it.
No, but Cav still followed and scored, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
He's always said that.
Hoovered up what was left.
He just got to score. He doesn't bother. He doesn't push his... He doesn't shoot his load to try and get over the top.
Yeah. Brad, talk to me about the break today.
The break? There we go, nowhere. You know, they were dead wood. There were three of them, headwind, break. They didn't get many. I think they got about a minute and a half, 2 minutes, 3 minutes. They didn't really get more than that.
So it's Omar Goldstein.
Yeah, actually,
Sean
to be
Benning,
fair to him, actually, he was the first Israeli to be in the breakaway in the Tour de France.
Yeah.
That was a big day for them.
And fair play, I interviewed him after, and he was...
He's a lovely guy, isn't he? Yeah, he's really nice.
Lovely interview, and it was just...
Yeah.
It's like, he didn't give up.
Yeah.
He still hoped, or like, there was... You never know what happens, even the crash. You know, if the peloton slows down or whatever, you get a bigger chance. So that's also the beauty of our sport. Of course, Albertsen Phoenix and De Koenig control, but you never know what happens. And it's great that a young rider like Omer still believed, we have a small chance. Let's go for it, but a small chance.
De Koenig could sort of relax from that point, because they were just keeping it in control. It was all nice and measured. It was almost like a normal Tour de France stage, dare I say it. And then 50Ks came along, and then you started to see attacks flying off the front again. And so, wow, Van Aert, we saw Mads Pedersen have a crack. We saw your mate Phil Gill as well.
Phil Gilbert.
Even he had a crack.
Yeah.
Did you see any of this from the bike?
No.
No.
I was at the front, so I miss all this stuff, you see.
You haven't missed much.
But yeah.
Probably so missing your opportunity.
Still racing. I can't believe we're still racing, Phil.
But the three off the front, they were looking for the combativity award today, weren't they?
Yeah,
that's what they were going for.
Yeah.
Can we talk about Patrick Lefebvre and his the fact that his call to bring Cav to the race has paid off massively?
Yeah. But I think Cav sort of made that decision for him by winning that last stage of the Tour of Belgium when he beat all those guys, you know? And Cav has just been himself and been the consummate professional that he is. And that worked in his favour as the relationship with Bennett broke down.
Yeah.
Cav never pushed for that tour spot. Cav just kept working away, loved it in the team, was happy. Whenever he'd go to a race, he'd give his best. He'd work for the team at times. He didn't have an ego. I think this year, more than ever, he saw it as a privilege to be in the position he was in. And he didn't feel entitled that I'm going to need to do this, you need to lead me out. And the team loved him for that, you know. Mm. And they all love him to bits. And by just being himself and watch the relationship of Bennett break down and self-destruct almost with Lefebvre, Cav just became the natural, I'm here, you know, a natural selection and winning as well.
And now he's got stage win number 34.
Yeah, and to be fair, you know, I wonder whether Sam would have been like here. Would he have had the same success, do you think? I probably would have done, actually, because Sam's f***ing quick.
Yeah.
You know, but no one commands a team like Cav does. You know, Cav's just a naturally lovable, and he's a real. I've never been in a team with a leader like him. He is no one that inspires you more than Cav really does. There, he's so like, I don't know. It's hard to explain. And I've been a leader, and I could never be a leader like he was. Even when I was leading the Tour de France, he was still the leader of the team. He would lead out on the road. You know, just call all the shots. He was great. Yeah.
Here's one for you as well. We've always backed him on this podcast. We've talked about him a lot when he wasn't doing so well. And people have asked us, why are you still talking about him? He's not relevant now. Yeah. And I think we would both say, no, Cav has continually been relevant.
The day retires, then you don't underestimate him. And that's typical of cycling. People going, he's not relevant. People are relevant. For some reason, I'm still f***ing relevant. You know, that's why I get asked about doing 20 interviews a day. And I don't understand why. I don't think I am. But I will have an opinion on something, and a better opinion than after done in that press thing on the end there, because half of them don't really know. They're the ones after ones criticising him, and they're all there licking his ass today.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Are you enjoying that at the moment at the tour? I mean,
I love standing there in front of that pen today, coming up, giving us a hug, and all them people there that wrote him off.
Yeah,
and now they all want to talk to him.
Yeah,
typical. They all make a living off of him.
Someone else who is still very much relevant, Marianne Vos, powering to win number 30 at the Women's Giro d'Italia yesterday.
She's fucking incredible.
Still as awesome as ever.
Yeah, yeah. And I can remember being at the Olympics in 2008 at the track and watching Marianne Vos win the points race there. And I've never seen another woman, apart from Lizzie Armistead, look so aesthetically beautiful on a bike as Marianne Vos. She's something. And to still be competing at that level, you know, she's an inspiration to women's cycling and to the men's as well, really, because of what she's achieved.
Yeah.
And should be put up there more with what Cav's done.
Yeah. Well, good to see Cav mention her on his Instagram story today.
Yeah, that was lovely of him, actually.
But I think it's also because he mentioned her, because Marianne didn't always have the easiest road to. I mean, people also called her off. Okay, she's not going to win anymore. And Marianne at least came back three times already and is going better than ever. 30 stage wins in the Giro says it all.
Knows a thing or two about comebacks herself. Anna van der Breggen leading the GC, we should mention, 2:55 ahead of her SD Works teammate Ashley Moorman-Passio. Demi Vollering in third at 3:07, and Lizzie, who you mentioned there, Brad, at 5:56, having taken the opening day's time trial. Let's look ahead to tomorrow.
Well, tomorrow, I mean, I hadn't even looked at tomorrow because we were so enthralled with today.
So we've got five categorised.
The first thing Bernie said to me tonight is, Cav's going to f***ing struggle tomorrow.
we touched on this earlier, but we've got five categorised climbs, a couple of Cat 2s in there, 183.7 kilometres from Carcassonne to Queant. It's going to be a painful day after today, isn't it, Bernie?
It has breakaway for everybody. All over. Yeah. It's going to be a painful day because it's going to be hot again. The wind down there, it's still going into the hills, but not a big mountain. So the wind is going to play a role, and it's going to take at least 55, 60 k still
probably I'm wrong, like in modern cycling, always wrong, but it's going to take forever till the group goes. Yeah. And that plays into the hands of CAF because it's a coefficient three. So that means the time cut is actually much lower than it would be really for... That's the, I think, the most dangerous days for him, not the real mountain days, the days where it's like a half mountain day.
Mm. I mean, we've talked about it being a sort of fairy tale script, this tour. The fairy tale, in my mind, is CAF makes it through the mountains. He's got more than enough energy to contest that final sprint stage on the Champs-Élysées. But before that, he's got... So we've got sprint stage, time trial, then Champs-Élysées, the last three stages. So does he take it? Does he go for it before the Champs-Élysées, or does he potentially go for the record on stage 35? Yeah, sorry, early, stage 35, not, number 35
he's not
on the Champs-Élysées.
For the record, he's going to. He's just racing Cav's race. He's racing this race as if there's no record. He's racing it. You know, he's not racing for the record. He doesn't have to back off to try and see get the record on Paris. He's going to try and take every sprint as it comes, and if it pans out like it did today for him, he'll try and take that win. It won't be like... If you get too cocky and try and plan it, that it's the perfect... I mean, you'll end up winning both the stages. You know, it's... when he started this race, it was about winning one stage. And then after that, it was about winning two stages. And then after that, it was about winning three. He's not sitting here thinking, right... Because I don't think... He doesn't operate like that. He's just clinical. And the minute you start trying to be cocky and thinking about things like that, I think that's when it all... Yeah. And he's not like that, Mark.
What's it like riding with Mark in the mountains, Bernie? Is it...
Pain in the arse, isn't it?
It's a long day.
Them two, honestly, they're like a married couple in the mountains, shouting at each other. Bernie will be on the front of the gruppetto, setting the tempo. Cav will be at the back going, Bernie! Bernie! And he's like, oh, f***ing hell, Mark. And they were always having these little domestics. Always. It was hilarious.
It was hilarious. At the same time, I mean, we had the days when we had the group, but the hardest days, I think, when it was like two or three of us, and the third person started looking at us when we started arguing, one riding up the Tourmalet on the left side and the other one on the right side, and he's in the middle of falling one of the wheels. It's like, what the heck is going on here?
There's probably, if Strava had downhill records, I think him, Cav and Renshaw probably have most of the Strava records in the Alps and Pyrenees, because some of the speeds, they'd be like 25 minutes down at one top of one, we'd be up the front, we'd be at the top of the Tourmalet, they'd be like somewhere else, and Sean go there 20, we'd get down the other side, they'd be 15 minutes down. We're like, the f*** they gained 10 minutes. Honestly, they were like, I don't know, you'd tell me more, wouldn't you?
Oh yeah, no, we had to take it on. It's like, we always made sure, it's like,
you had to go fast on the downhill.
Yeah, we got attacked by the rest of the gruppetto okay from the top, because they were like, we're not going to sit with you because we're going to get dropped in the downhill. So they attacked us on the hill, on the mountain, to gain at least 30 seconds. So when we passed them, they could have at least a little chance to be followed. And yeah, it's all about that. It's just there's no moment where you could take it easy in a gruppetto. You just have to race. As soon as you get dropped, you know, your brain switches and like, okay, we have to stay in time.
Just how good Cav is downhill as well, do they?
Oh yeah.
He's unbelievable downhill.
And no support from motorbikes. That's what people also never see. But the front group gets always filmed. When in the gruppetto, there's nobody with you, at least a commissaire that whistles. And if you take one bin, he's already on your back, and then Cav gets nervous, and then it gets loud, and then it gets, 200 Swiss francs there, and 500. It could be an expensive weekend for Cav.
Who's he sworn more at? Has he sworn more at you, Bernie, in the mountains, or Brad, just through you being lifelong mates?
No, I think he swore more at commissars, isn't it?
Definitely. Yeah. But we had our moments when Bradley was in yellow and we were at the back. Can you ride a bit slower in the front? It's like, no, I think they can't, because they have to do, they have other duties at the front there. It's like, how many riders have time?
Do you remember the Tour of Britain where I got the ump and I rode on the front for about 20k flat out and he was getting really arse with me?
Yeah, I remember that.
Then he got dropped and I turned around the road and went back for him. You remember that? That was your fault, that. You and Jeremy Hunt. You know what happened the night before, didn't you?
We were in this carousel there, and we couldn't get out. It was just turning by. It was just wouldn't stop, and we couldn't get out. And so it got a bit late, but...
You couldn't get out of a turning bar?
Yeah.
That's the excuse you're sticking to,
isn't it? Still exists. A nice hotel. Nice bar.
Where was it?
You remember? I have no idea anymore.
Stoke-on-Trent. Somewhere like that.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Matt Stevens was in the bar, actually. Yeah. Matt will tell you the story.
Maybe we'll ask Matt next time he's on. I'm sure they'll be raising a glass to him in Stoke-on-Trent tonight. That's it for this episode of the Bradley Wiggins Show by Eurosport, brought to you by Zwift. Find your fun on the cycling app where fun is fast. Bernie, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Bernie. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Brad. Thank you to our producer as well, Pete Burton. You can follow Eurosport on Twitter at Eurosport_UK. Plus, you can find us on Facebook and Instagram. Download, subscribe and rate us wherever you get your podcasts. Brad, I think final word has got to be to you today, or from you today to Cav. If in that melee earlier, when you gave him a big hug after he was done with his podium duties, if you didn't have the cameras on you and you didn't have the microphones in front of you, what might you have said to him?
Probably what I said to him tonight when I messaged him. I said, what did I say to him? I'll read it to what he said to him. Proud is an understatement, mate. You're truly an inspiration to all of us. That's what I said to him. Yeah.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.